This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
Dono in for Hawk today on the Hawkman and Crowder Show. Talk some Canes here. Let's go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Matt Schodel from Cane Sport joins us. Matt, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing very well. And so a couple of news developments start with Mark Richt being named Walter Camp National Coach of the Year. Did you see this coming? Do you think this was the right guy for that award?
Oh, yeah. How could you dispute it?
Well, if they've already snubbed Manny Diaz, I thought maybe the snub for Richt was coming.
Yeah, assistant coach of the year. I mean, Mark Richt, this program hasn't been where it got to this year in over a decade, and Mark Richt took it there way ahead of anything anyone reasonably could have envisioned. I mean, this is basically somewhat a depleted roster for sure, and he found a way to win the first 10 games, beating Notre Dame and Virginia Tech along the way, reinvigorating the fan base, doing it all the right way, kids staying out of trouble. I mean, there's really nothing but positives you can say about Mark Richt, and I don't think anybody deserves it any more than him, because the other coaches that are coaching winning programs, they've been winning. This guy took a program that wasn't winning and really turned it around, and the future looks even better. I mean, what he's done with his staff at this program is really remarkable.
Matt, you're talking about a coach getting his due respect, and I'm with you. Mark Richt turning his team around with mostly Al Golden's guys. It's amazing what he did going 10-2 this season, and hopefully coming in and beating Wisconsin. What about the players? Did any player get messed over? Did they all get their due respect? Because the only first-team All-ACC member was the kicker, Badgley. is anybody else getting messed over in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, the best thing, Mark Richt's not a guy who laughs, but he is actually pretty funny in his own way. So he comes into a press conference right after those ACC teams are named in the auditorium at UM, and he stands up there, and the first thing he says, he always makes the announcements first, almost like the White House press secretary, and he gets up there and he says, "All right, first order of business, let me announce all of our ACC first team award winners." And then he pauses, he looks at his sheet, and he says, "Michael Badgley." And then he says, "Okay, questions." I mean, everyone knew Miami deserved way more than that. Miami just has never really gotten respect from the ACC. They haven't gotten respect from the nation. And you know what? Coaches want the kids to get respect, don't get me wrong. But I don't think they mind, because this us against the world mentality that this team thrives on, as the program has always thrived on. I mean, even Manny Diaz was saying these kids finally understand what that was about back in the day. They feel it personally this year, how it's us against the world. We don't get respect even when we're winning 10 games in a row. Everyone says we're not for real, blah blah blah. And look, did Clemson show that Miami's not at Clemson's level? Of course. But Miami's bringing in a top 5 recruiting class. The future is extremely bright. There's going to be tons of talent back next year. There's going to be what I think will be a really interesting quarterback competition to be announced, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and let's talk about the quarterback here for a second. Obviously, Rozier going up against the Clemson defense was a different thing. That's a tough matchup for anybody. But these last couple of games, Matt, Malik Rozier has looked a lot more like the spring football version of himself than the 10-0 to start the season version of himself. Should Canes fans be concerned about that? Is there any explanation for the funk that he's been in?
And I wish he was a spring version of himself in these last two games. I mean, it was just bad. I've never seen a Miami quarterback. And I covered the team when Kirby Freeman was throwing passes, and I think he was like,
it was against North Carolina State. I think he started, and I remember it because I wasn't watching that game. I was watching the box score, and I thought there was an error. Like, I thought ESPN.com was broken because it kept saying, he's 0 for 11, he's 0 for 12. That can't be right.
Like 1 for something. I mean, look, it wasn't that bad, but Malik had open guys. That's what really should be upsetting to Miami fans and to the coaching staff, the offensive coaching staff. They put a plan together, and when the quarterback can't throw the ball on target on time, you can't execute it, and it makes the coaches look bad. And that was the case for Malik in this game and the Pittsburgh game. It's unfortunate. Malik's a great kid. I thought he was going to bounce back after that Pittsburgh game. He did not. Now he's going to have to bounce back against another really good defense in Wisconsin. And my feeling is, even if he does really well against Wisconsin, I can't imagine Miami coaches not making this an open competition in the spring. I expect him to get a commitment from Jaron Williams, who is basically, to me, a 5-star level guy. Tomorrow he's announcing. He outplayed some of the 5-stars at the opening. And, of course, you have Nicosi Perry already on board, Cade Weldon, who hasn't looked real good, but I think that Mark Richt's going to give all those guys chances in the spring, because why wouldn't you after what Malik's done these last two games?
And, Matt, with them missing that bye week, which everybody, over, you know, on a 10-game winning streak, people, you know, they overlooked that. But with not having that bye week, do you think that had anything to do with them wearing down, no bye week, and then the pressure of the, you know, the growing in the rankings, the pressure of the national success, the turnover chain, and then not having any week, not having any, you know, big range of days to kind of, you know, decompress and get back right? Do you think missing that bye week hurt this team?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Channing, you guys don't make excuses when you're playing, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't like that excuse at all. I know some people have brought it up. Players haven't brought it up. Coaches have not brought it up when asked about it. I can't envision that being an excuse. They got back to a regular schedule September 23rd. They were in good condition, certainly by October 7th at Florida State. They won at Florida State. They played four more straight games, and they beat Virginia Tech, beat Notre Dame, came back and beat Virginia. I mean, the thing to me that was really the key – look, at Pittsburgh, they just didn't seem like they wanted to play. I don't know what happened up there. But against Clemson, when you lose Chris Herndon and Amon Richards the week of that game, I mean, you can't, it's hard enough to hang with a team like Clemson, which has been stacking class upon class, recruiting class upon recruiting class with good coaching, you know, top classes after top classes. You don't have depth in the first place at Miami just because, you know, like you guys said, he's winning with some of Al Golden's guys. Yeah, Al Golden left a pretty depleted roster. I think right now they're in double digits under the 85 total scholarships as it is, and some of those guys don't even belong at a program like Miami. So you add those three guys, the three top offensive players you can't lose, and they're out of the game. I mean, that just makes it doubly difficult. So that's, if you want to point to an excuse, which, again, I don't like doing, that's the excuse I'll point to, is injuries. I'm not going to point to something, you know, September 2nd to September 23rd, that 21-day break.
Matt Schodel, canesport.com, joining us here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. And Matt, some other news. I'm not even going to say it's big news because this was very expected, but Mark Walton officially announced today he is foregoing his senior season for the NFL. And given you do a lot of recruiting coverage, give the fans an idea of what Miami's backfield will look like next year without Walton, with Travis Homer coming back, DJ Dallas, and Lorenzo Lingard and Cam Davis expected to come in. Miami seems stacked there.
Yeah, well, you just named the main guys. About the only guy you didn't mention is Realis George, who's a fullback. They're finally going to have a fullback for
Mark
Richt, who's a real fullback. And this kid actually likes playing fullback, you know? So that's something, a 250-pound bowling ball who's just going to open lanes up. But, yeah, I do think that DJ Dallas is going to stay at running back. They're also going to use him a little bit in the slot. He's a transformed receiver. Unfortunately for Miami, it just doesn't look like Robert Burns is really going to be able to contribute. The fact that he was healthy and they moved DJ from receiver to running back before giving Robert a chance or anything like that is a bad sign for Robert. Treyon Gray never panned out, obviously, coming off that knee. So, yeah, it's a thin depth chart. DJ Dallas and Travis Homer obviously will be the two main returning guys, but I do think that Lorenzo Lingard in particular could even emerge. You know, it's hard to say he'll emerge as a starter. Travis Homer's done really well when he's gotten the opportunities and gotten really the holes to run through. But, I mean, Lingard's another he's like one of these – he's a future potential running back great at Miami, and they've had a lot of them. So you look at this kid, the way he runs, hard-nosed running style. He's a champion sprinter, state champion sprinter. I mean, he's the real deal. And I don't want to shortchange Cameron Davis either. I mean, he's a really good player too. So, yeah, they're going to be in much better shape at running back next year than this year, that's for sure.
Matt, when I go on Twitter, all I see is that damn Mike Rumpf at every recruit's house in the world trying to steal players from UF.
Love you, Rumpf.
But no, I wanted to ask you, Matt. As a Gator, I'm upset that we had to change coaches the same year UM gets back relevant top 10 AP, you know, coaches poll, everything else. But is it really moving the needle on recruiting? Did you see the Jeff Fisher and McElwain leaving move that needle for UM recruiting?
Yes and no. I mean, they just landed a Florida State commitment who I think might have flipped anyway, Patrick Joyner. They're after a couple of other, you know, Florida State commitments. We'll see what happens there. But they already had, you know, 20 commitments before all these coaching changes happened. They're probably going to wind up with a class of 25 to 27. You know, guys like Pat Surtain and Tyson Campbell are priorities. They were priorities before the coaching changes, you know. So I don't think at the end of the day it's going to make as big a difference in the class of 2018 as it might make in the class of 2019, class of 2020, because if you look at the boat Miami was in when they had all these coaching changes, you know, they had commitments, but they didn't have great commitments. The commitments generally stuck, even with the coaching changes, and that still might happen, you know, with kids that decommit, sometimes they come back on board after new coaches come in and establish a rapport. But with that said, you know, it's the future classes that are really impacted, because a 2019-2020 kid goes to that Miami-Notre Dame game, you know, has a good time, and then he sees Florida and Florida State struggling. Well, you know, which programs are you going to want to go to, especially if he lives in South Florida? You know, they were leaving South Florida to go to the Florida States and the Alabamas and the LSUs. Now maybe they'll stay home because they see that they can be coached to become NFL players. They can win national championships. Those are the things that high school kids want. So to me, that's the biggest thing, not necessarily that there's major issues with the coaching staffs at Florida and Florida State and with the teams at Florida and Florida State this year, but more so that Miami showed itself that, hey, come here, we'll coach you up, you'll win championships, and you can stay home and play in front of your family. I mean, that's the biggest thing. So you add all that up together, I mean, the future is really bright in all respects for Miami right now.
You made me feel no better, Matt.
I love you, Matt. You're my boy, Matt. You're my boy. And Matt, let me ask you this big picture in college football. So there's a lot of whining happening in Columbus, Ohio. I actually agree with the committee giving Alabama the nod over Ohio State, but does Urban Cryer have a case that his team should have been in?
My personal thing, what I've been telling people, is I just don't see how you take a two-loss team ahead of a one-loss team, just period.
Right.
I mean, you remember back in the day when it was just two teams that would go, those crazy old days where you pick two teams and the third team's like, why did we get left out or whatever? Well, you know, now you have four teams, but in those days when there was two teams, right, usually the third team that's left out is an undefeated team, and they're like, you know, we didn't have the easiest schedule or whatever. That's what they're always worried about, right, the third undefeated team. Now you're looking at a whole ton of one-loss teams and then two-loss teams, but how do you put a two-loss team ahead of a one-loss team? I just don't understand how you can ever do that, honestly. If a two-loss team's ever in the top four, they better have both those losses against other teams that are in that top three, you know, and that wasn't the case in this situation. So I'm fine with Alabama going there, even though they didn't play in the championship game. You know, I think Alabama's also the better team. So why shouldn't the better team go?
Matt, a two-part question. I know it's a month away, but I got to ask you about Wisconsin. First, do you believe the atmosphere will be, comparative to the Notre Dame-UM game? Like, how will it compare to that game, that atmosphere, that excitement, and the game? How do you think Wisconsin-UM, how do you think they match up?
Okay, well, I'd love to say it'll be the same atmosphere as Notre Dame, but no. I mean, that atmosphere, I don't know how you even replicate that atmosphere. I mean, game day on campus and fans partying all day long, you know, and looking forward to the rivalry game. You know, Wisconsin is not the same rivalry with Miami as Notre Dame, obviously. Miami at that point was still, you know, thinking national championship. That's obviously not the case anymore. So it's obviously a different vibe. Now, how does Miami match up with Wisconsin? First of all, it's a really big game for Miami. Fans may not be aware of that because they're not playing for a national title, but you don't want to end the season losing three straight games
right
into your offseason. You just don't, okay? It's bad for recruiting. It's bad for player morale. It's bad for everything. There's just nothing good about it. You want to win your first major bowl game in over a decade. You just really have to do that, okay? Now, I do like the matchup because, to me, Wisconsin's a little bit like Notre Dame, maybe with a quarterback who doesn't throw quite as well, which is great for Miami because I still think, even with the statistics looking good for the Miami defensive backs, that they're not a great group. I mean, you see guys running free, and the good quarterbacks have found those guys. Wisconsin does not have a great quarterback. They thrive with a great offensive line, a great running game, and Miami's front seven is really good. So I like that matchup. The key to me is not going to be that, but it's going to be, can Miami's offense score against a really good defense? Because that's been the issue, you know. Malik throwing interceptions, not moving the ball for first downs, keeping the defense on the field too long. You know, they've got to find a way to generate some yards on offense, or they're going to be in big trouble.
Great stuff here, as always, from Matt Schodel, canesport.com. Matt, thank you so much for the time.
Sure, anytime.
Love it.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.